Okay, so yesterday while I was holding screaming twins, so I was looking at Al-Hatera. They had a new. They always have a lot on Shmoot because it's Shmoot plus Haggadah, whatever. But they put a new one, and I think it's a very interesting question to ask. I've sort of thought about it piecemeal, but I do like how they put it together. So let's think about it together. Okay, so they have a unit, new unit called Nature of the Bondage, right? What was the slavery like in Egypt? And they note that there is this problem that, you know, being Americans, we have a certain vision in our mind of what slavery looks like. But that is, I would say almost definitely, but no, definitely nothing like what slavery looked like in Egypt whatsoever, right? It just didn't. It doesn't look like slavery in the South. It just doesn't, right? What it does look like is a little bit complicated, but let's point out a few reasons why it is really complicated, what exactly was going on in slavery. So, first thing that seems to emerge from the psukim is, where did, right, when you think of sort of slavery in the South, where do slaves live? Right, with their masters, because they don't own property, right? They are chattel, they are definitely not landowners. Is that true of Jews in Egypt? Clearly not, right? At least not of everybody, because they continue to live in Goshen. Right, they continue to live in Goshen. Not everybody. It seems like the worst. Right, there, we talked about last year, which is that it does seem to be that some Egyptian Jews lived amongst the Egyptians and were more house servants, right, and therefore lived amongst the Egyptians. But there's at least a sizable number of Jews who are living in Goshen. Right, so this is not exactly chattel slavery in that sense, where people are they're property owners, right, which makes a very big difference. Okay. That's one difference that forces us to think about what exactly the nature of this slavery is. Second, right, when you think of like chattel slavery, one of the central evils they talk about is that because people were treated as subhuman, their families were split up, right? Because you could sell a kid, you could sell a parent, you could sell whatever, right? Is that the case in Egypt? No, clearly not, right? Oh, well, let's come back to the genocide. Hold the infanticide issue for a minute, right? Their families seem to remain intact. Well, coming back to the infanticide point, right? But fundamentally, it talks about family units, right? That does seem to still exist. Did they work day and night? What? How do we know that they didn't work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? How do we know that's just not the reality? How do we know this? I'm not guessing, right? How do we know? Right? How do we know that the Jewish slaves were not working day and night? So part of it is they're going home, but there's also a very good indication it's not just that. It's not like work until you completely, right, collapse. How do we know that it's not even that? Come on, people think. Because they had quotas, and when they finished their quota, they went home, right? And that's why when they stop giving them straw, right, they start complaining because they still have to fill their quota, right? But clearly, they're not working day and night. They're working until they fill their quota. They're given a certain task. They finish it. They go home, right? And then Paro makes it harder by not giving them the straw, so it takes longer, and it's harder to actually fill the quota. But it's clear they're not, right? This is not like they're living on their master's property, working day and night at their, right? They are working somewhere. They live elsewhere, right? They fill a quota. Yeah, it's a daily quota, right? That's what it seems like, right? Right at the end of the day, right? They have a quota, right? Add to that the fact that the Jews romanticize their time in Egypt and what they were able to eat in Egypt, which we can all say, no, that's a lie, right? You weren't really fed well in Egypt, or you were fed so that you could work, right? But the fact is the Egyptians do, right, the Jews do remember Egypt somewhat fondly throughout the Midbar, right? So it's clearly not all bad unless they're completely, right, completely, whatever, right? The fact is they're remembering the fish, they're remembering the good food, right? And there's a certain amount of freedom of movement because, right, we can get into the question of why are these slaves are allowed to move around and why is Moshe and Aaron, are they allowed in and out, right? And why is, right, so Chazal's big answer to this is everyone is enslaved except for Levi, and Levi is free to go wherever they want, right? But it's clear that at least some of the Jews are just traveling around. They're going to the palace. Aaron is leaving Egypt to go greet Moshe and then coming back, or at least going towards the edge of Egypt or something, right? Meaning, right, there's a lot of evidence when you look at the picture that we're not exactly clear what's going on in this slavery, right? Now, let me add one more point, and this is the one that Chaim said. Oh, what about infanticide, right? Doesn't infanticide make this like, well, I don't know how bad the slavery is, but there's clearly a lot going on here because, you know, they're killing all the babies. Yes and no. Meaning, infanticide is terrible. We can all agree to that, despite the Republic, right? Despite Plato being totally mabsut with infanticide, right? Fine. But only of stupid people, right? Okay, we know. One of the most, no, not one of, the most disturbing moment in the Republic. Fine. But the infanticide, you know, incident is terrible, but how much of the time in Egypt was there such a decree?
80 years.
So the answer is almost definitely very short. Right? Almost definitely. What proof do we have that it's very short? Well, let's see. It wasn't in effect when Aaron was born, who's 3 years older than Moshe. Right? And it seems to have stopped being in effect not so long after Moshe is born, which is actually the position of Chazal, right? The position of Chazal is exactly what I just said, that it was put in place a little bit before Moshe was born because the astrologers predicted that the Savior would be born, and once Moshe is thrown into the river, they said, ah, the Savior was drowned, and they stopped the decree, right? So Chazal actually think this is a very, very short period, a year or two, right? But in Pshat, that's also the case, because Aaron is clearly born without any drama, right? And after Moshe, there are plenty of people alive who are less than 80 years old, right? We know that Moshe is 80 when they leave Egypt, and yet we know there's a whole generation between 20 and 60 of men, 600,000 of them, right, between 20 and 60, who die in the desert, which means that if Moshe was 80 and all the people between 20 and 60, there's 600,000 men, right, by time they leave Egypt, that means at least in those 40 years, right, in which those people had to be born, there was no such decree, right? This is like very basic mathematics, right? We know there are 600,000 people who were born. There seems not to have been a mass genocide, right, or infanticide against them. So it shot definitely indicates that this is a short-lived decree. How short we can talk about, but it's clearly not that long. It's a few months, it's a few years, who knows, right? Chazal think it's very short. Chazal thinks like a year, right? Meaning it's from when, or, you know, it's from when Moshe is seen to be born. Yeah, so right, Chazal in the Midrashim basically painted it like a little bit before his conception to after he's thrown in to the water, and that's it. Right, so like, besides the fact that another good piece of evidence that infanticide is as bad as it is was not a feature of most of their time in Egypt, is that look throughout all of Tanakh. Every single time Egypt is remembered, what's remembered? You were slaves in Egypt. How many times in Tanakh does it say, and remember that Pharaoh carried out infanticide? Never, right? If there was like many years of infanticide, you would think that that would like come up in our our national memory in the Torah, but the Torah like never brings it up. Like even the Torah doesn't seem to make a very big deal of this after, it's very important to the Moshe story, right? Like that's what drives the Moshe story, but in terms of the several hundred year experience in Egypt, it seems to not have been too much of the story. It was a very dark moment in the story, but it's not that much of the story. Add to that the fact that it's not entirely clear in the story the extent to which Jews are the only slaves, right? The Midrashim are very into this, right, in figuring this out. But in Pshat, it's not clear that the Jews are the only slaves, and it's not clear that the Jews are slaves to the exclusion of the Egyptians, right? It's not clear that the Egyptians are not in some way enslaved. Remember, they started out as slaves to Pharaoh also, right? The Egyptians are also slaves to Pharaoh at some point, and even the Jews' slavery is introduced by Sarei Misim, which may just mean tax collectors, right? So right, there's good reason to believe that their slavery is may at different points, and Chazal do believe this, right, was not slavery the whole time. At some point it was taxes or labor tax, right? So what's very striking is that the second you actually start to think of the evidence that we have in terms of the short-term nature of the infanticide, in terms of the fact that Jews are owning homes and going home and only have daily quotas and seem to be traveling around a bit, and do, in fact, later on dream about how well they were fed, right, it forces you to ask the question, what exactly did this slavery look like? There was clearly slavery. No one's denying that. That's central to the entire story. I mean, they made their lives difficult, they enslaved them, but it's really not clear what that slavery looked like. And even to the extent that there is slavery, which there is, right, it's not clear. Are they slaves to the crown? Are they slaves to individuals? Does this change at different times? Right? Right. At some places, it's clearly slaves to the crown. They're building Pitom and Ramses, but then at different places, they seem to be inside the Egyptians' homes, and that's who they're asking for, right, silver and gold before they leave, right? So when you actually think about the evidence that we have in Shemot, you suddenly realize that we are so used to thinking about slavery in the American context, and, you know, the people who made the movies are used to thinking of in the American context, right, whether it be the Ten Commandments or Prince of Egypt or anything else, right, that we tend to think that this is, you know, like American Southern chattel slavery, right, when it clearly is not, right? It's not good, but it clearly isn't that, right? It's clearly something very different. And therefore, we're forced to ask the question, okay, well, if it isn't that, then what is it, right? What was it? Were there different stages? Right, and maybe that explains some of the problems. Were there less bad stages and worse stages? Right, again, we have to figure out how the infanticide worked into this, right? But and how central that was. Okay, I think because we've already done 13 minutes, I'll say today was we're laying out the problems, and tomorrow we'll try with the solutions. But I really last night as I was thinking about it, right, and I was reading this right piece on Al HaTorah, I really realized like it's right, like. We don't think nearly carefully enough about the evidence that we have in the story. So when I read just the introduction to the unit, I was like, aha, yes, this is a question that I must actually think about. And again, even though I know some of the Midrashim that clearly highlight the fact that it's not what we think it is, right? Like, right, clearly, right? I mean, we know that. Like, even like classic, this is like classic Chazal, right? I'm not like, right, Chazal say it was one thing, and like, the classic approach is that it was like chattel slavery, and, right, now some modern person is showing me that that's not what the Torah means. This is not what that is, right? Like, even the classic Midrashim we know, right? Like I said, we think about the infanticide, it's terrible, but the Midrashim are the, right, the classic Mefarshim that Rashi quotes, right, classic Midrashim are the ones that say infanticide is only a little bit before Moshe is conceived or a little bit after he's thrown in the water. Right? Like, that's like classic, very standard midrash. It was learned when I was a kid. I just never really thought about the fact that what Chazal are telling you is that infanticide isn't a big part of the Egypt story. It's a part of Moshe's story, not Egypt. I just like, you know, I probably should have realized that that's what Chazal are getting at. Right? I just didn't. Right? Or when Chazal say that the Jews are living in Goshen and therefore aren't hit by the plagues, what they're telling you is that the Jews live, own property, live in a separate city, and therefore it's plausible for them to not be hit by plagues and not show up to work. Right? Like, there's a place where they live, which is not work, which is so far away that they don't actually get, right? These are classic, right? This is like classic traditional midrashic thought. Right? And when you think about what they're actually telling you about the slavery, you realize, oh, they're telling you the Jews live in a separate city and own property. Right? Like, that's what is implicit. It's not what Chazal are getting at. They're getting at the Jews aren't hit because they're in Goshen. But implicit in what they're saying is the Jews own property separate from the Egyptians, which is shocking when you actually think about it, right? So this is not even like, right, so the reason I think, and we'll continue tomorrow, that you have to think about it is because, like, even the things we know about this story, we just never put, at least I didn't put two and two together, and actually just, like, sort of take it from that vantage point, which, what does this tell us? Okay, we'll do that tomorrow, okay? Here's the problems. Tomorrow, we'll sketch out this, the solution.